Welcome into the Michelle and Junie Show, presented by the Nashville Jam Company in Berry Hill, Nashville's premier breakfast and brunch spot. And Superbook Sports voted the number one sportsbook in Vegas. Download their app today. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios on this beautiful Saturday morning. And listen, to kick it off this morning, guys, make sure you follow our Instagram at 1025 The Game Nashville. Happy Saturday, everyone. Junie, how are we doing today?
I'm doing good. You know me. I'm always covering high school football, and I was out at Waverly against East Nashville last night. Drove an hour and a half out to Waverly. Never been out there before, but it was a good small town. Great game. A lot of action in that one, so a little sleepy from that one, but you know, I'm up this morning, got my caffeine in, and I'm ready to go with you this morning, Michelle.
We love it. I'm Michelle Knezvik with Junie Riddle. We've also got Jared Cassidy in the building today. Jared, how are we feeling this morning?
Pretty good, other than it snowing and a little bit rainy this morning, but we're here, and time to talk some football and lots of action in the Mid-State.
Yes, we love it. Jared was up very early this morning and got hit with his first bit of snow. I am not ready for the winter. I am ready for spring, fall, and summer, except for winter. But hope everybody is doing great on this Saturday morning. We're going to talk a little Tennessee Titans. We're going to talk a little Tennessee Vols, 12-team playoff. We have also got Anilo Pirro from Mile High Sports in Denver to come on at 9:30. We're going to preview a little Broncos-Titans game coming up this Sunday in Nissan Stadium. We're also going to talk a little 12-team playoff, Junie. There's been a lot of conversation back and forth on what scenarios could work out in this college football world we're seeing right now and who could be those Final Four teams standing. So let's get to the morning brew, as we always do. Okay, so biggest story, I would say, probably in Nashville this week is the fact that we don't know if Ryan Tannehill is going to play for the Tennessee Titans this Sunday. He obviously got hurt in the Indianapolis game, came out for a snap, and then went into the medical tent. They wrapped up his ankle, and then he went back on the field, finished out the game. They got the sweep over the Indianapolis Colts. And then the following week, they head to Houston, and there was some question marks on whether Ryan Tannehill would play. We saw him on the practice field that week. He spoke to the media and didn't even travel with the team. Malik Willis gets his first start in the NFL. They end up getting the win. It also is against the Houston Texans. Derrick Henry rushes for 219 yards and absolutely dominated that game. Then Sunday Night Football, last week, they head to Arrowhead, face the Kansas City Chiefs for a night game. Side note, Travis Kelce just gets so frazzled by the Titans.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean,
they get under his skin.
Listen, I mean, that was the first time they've beaten them since Vrabel's been the head coach of the Titans outside of the AFC Championship.
I was just going to say, yeah, the AFC Championship, that is the only one. But they just, listen, when I saw that Malik Willis was starting that game, I think the line was about 13.5 in favor of the Chiefs. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, gosh. They might be covering that. And listen, I mean, it went down wire to wire in overtime, obviously. The Tennessee Titans couldn't get it done. The Chiefs end up getting the win, which this win could play a role into seeding once we get into playoff time, whether you get home field advantage in the playoffs. Another big story in the AFC, Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen has an elbow injury. He is not going to be playing this week against the Vikings. Which the Vikings, I think, have just been a little bit disrespected considering they're 7-1.
Yeah, no, they're 7-1 right now. But it's a suspect.
It's a soft 7-1.
It is
seven.
It is so. It is such a soft 7-1.
Guys, if they're a soft 7-1, then the Philly, then oh my gosh, the Phillies, then the Eagles need to be a soft 8-0.
Well, here's the difference between the Vikings and Eagles, because one, they actually played each other, and the Eagles absolutely dominated the Vikings for their one loss.
But it was prime time, and we all know.
But number two,
Kirk is not
Vikings. Vikings have come up really close against teams they shouldn't have. The Eagles have handled those teams. So the Eagles, although, yeah, they are undefeated, yeah, their schedule hasn't been that good, but they've actually handled those teams. The Vikings have kept it close in a lot of games that a 7-1 team shouldn't.
But listen, but we're just counting wins.
Yeah, I was just going to say, my only thing is that Kirk Cousins is the signal caller back there, and I just don't trust him. I mean,
what do you mean, Jared? You don't like the shirt off? You don't like the dance? You don't like the chains?
I mean, hey, he's, you know, Adam Schefter, they can go at it if they want. They can have a dance battle. That's fine. But
that was
wild
behavior.
Yeah, that was crazy. I don't know. Something about Kirk Cousins, man, just seems that, like, like they'll do this, and then at some point it's going to turn and it's going to go south on them. I just think that that's how it's going to play out.
Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like Kirk Cousins and the way the Vikings are performing right now is very similar to the way people viewed Ryan Tannehill in season before last, so that would have been 2020, right? And you hear the sound of Greeny saying, Ryan Tannehill is the most disrespected figure in all of sport. Do you know that line I'm talking about?
No, and I get that, but at the same time, I mean, Ryan Tannehill still has more playoff wins than Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins has one.
Listen, I have people, I have seen on ESPN people putting him in his top 12 quarterbacks right now. Kirk Cousins.
He puts up good numbers. I'm not going to say the guy doesn't put up good numbers, but listen, that's not everything. I mean, Kirk Cousins' record in primetime games is atrocious. I don't have it up on me right now, but I mean, I can sit here and tell you that it's not good. I mean,
he's not great, Bob.
He doesn't win big games. The one playoff game that he got on the Saints is like his one claim to fame. Then they ended up getting blown out by San Francisco in their route to the Super Bowl that year. But listen, I'm not a believer in Kirk Cousins. I'm really not a believer in the Minnesota Vikings in general. I've been saying it all year. They just don't pass the eye test for me. They might get a win in this game. Listen, Case Keenum is no slouch at quarterback, and if anything, he played for the Minnesota Vikings. He took them to the NFC Championship last year, and if anybody wants to beat this team, it's probably going to be him. Look for the Buffalo Bills to keep it a very competitive game against this Minnesota Vikings this weekend. The Buffalo Bills still have an excellent, excellent roster, and something that a lot of people don't talk about is that, listen, Case Keenum and Stephon Diggs, the Minneapolis Miracle, are now on the Buffalo Bills, and they're going to be playing the Vikings at home. I don't know. I think the Bills might have a chance to still get the win.
Listen, we'll be making picks for some of the games around the AFC at 9:45 today. I think that line is about 3.5 in favor of the Bills, and it's in Buffalo, so it's pretty much a pick 'em because you get the 3 points at home. But let's go to our text line really quick, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ryan from Chicago said, yo, why is Kirk Cousins so ripped, though? Had to read that because that is just hilarious. If you've seen that photo or that video, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yo, he is jacked. He is.
And he's rocking those chains for sure.
And they're definitely real. I want to know how much money. I want to know how much those chains were worth on him.
I would say over 10 grand. No, maybe for one of those chains was 10 grand. I genuinely think he had over $100,000, if not more than that. Maybe a quarter mil on his neck. Because listen, those big thick chains, some of those are like tens and thousands of dollars.
Text us how much money you think all of that on Kirk Cousins was on the plane the other day at 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. We just got on a little Vikings tangent real quick, but heading back local here to the Tennessee Titans, a lot of injuries heading into this game this Sunday, a lot of prominent injuries, especially on the defensive end. We saw how tough that defense played in the Sunday night football game in Arrowhead Stadium. They were on the field for a majority of that game. And I think just looking at Jeffrey Simmons at the end of that game is a testament. I mean, he was pulling himself off of the field, and Jeffrey Simmons is a guy who is not going to be playing today. Mike Vrabel ruled him out on Friday, including Bud Dupree, Zach Cunningham, Amani Hooker has been ruled out, which that's going to be a player I want to keep an eye on because I think his injury might be a bit more serious, because the first time Mike Vrabel was asked about it, he was like, yeah, I don't think Monty Hooker is going to be playing. He was already ruled out Friday. But Jeffrey Simmons and Bud Dupree not being a part of this defense heading into this Sunday's AFC matchup against the Broncos. The Broncos have a very, very solid defense. They've held teams to about 20 points all season. I know their offense has been janky and been a big disappointment with Russell Wilson, but the Tennessee Titans not having Jeffrey Simmons and Bud Dupree is a huge loss to their defense this week.
And that makes this the decision to go with Tannehill in this game is so pivotal because, listen, I don't know if the Titans can get it done without Tannehill, and you're talking about Bud Dupree and Jeffrey Simmons. I mean, controlling the line of scrimmage on defense was the only reason they were in that game in Kansas City to begin with. So you take that out of the mix, I really don't know what they're going to do. I mean, that is the identity of this team, is getting to the quarterback, disrupting them, controlling the line of scrimmage. And you look at this Denver team, and this Denver team is really, really good on defense. They are missing Browning, who's a really good edge rusher for them. So that's going to help alleviate some of the pressure that's going on these inexperienced tackles for the Tennessee Titans. But still, I mean, all around, this defense is really, really good for Denver. They're going to come out and play really explosively. But the fact that Tennessee isn't going to have their two best defenders on the line of scrimmage is going to really kill them. I think this could leave an opening for Russell Wilson in this offense that has a lot of talent on it. They just haven't really, you know, found their mix yet. They haven't, like you said, they haven't clicked. So this could be a week that they do that, and it's the National Football League. Anything can happen on a week-to-week basis, so it's really something to look out for, and it's a cause for concern going into this game.
Well, and another note, the Broncos are coming off an off week, so they've had that extra week for rest. The Tennessee Titans already had their off week earlier in the season. They have been very banged up, and this has just been a constant trend for this Tennessee Titans team, and there was a big, you know, cheer for Mike Vrabel when he won Coach of the Year last year and was able to use the most ever active players outside of an NFL strike year because of so many injuries and turnaround and grabbing guys off practice squads. But, I mean, this year you almost question, what is going on? Why have they just had such bad luck with all of these players just having all of these injuries? So this Titans team is very banged up heading into this game on Sunday. This Broncos team is healthier than ever. I think they had about four or five guys on their injury list, whereas the Titans were about triple that.
Yeah.
So that is definitely something to keep an eye out on. Really quickly, too, just talking a little college football, and we'll get back into college football at 9:45 when we make our picks and talk a little bit about the Tennessee Vols. Obviously, with their loss to Georgia.
Shouldn't have washed that hat, Jared.
Was that last week?
No, yeah, it was last week.
I'm like, have we talked about this yet?
No, not at all. But, I mean, hey, look.
It's
beginning
Georgia.
Of the season, yeah. I mean, they're the number one team in the land, people. Like,
it was already marked as an L for Tennessee beginning of the season. Everybody said, oh, yeah, Tennessee's max is going to be 10-2. Now we're looking at 11-1,
yes,
potentially heading into the playoffs for this team. So, you know, but still hope. It's still better than what we had expected going in. But yeah, a rough loss and rough look for this Tennessee
offense.
Yeah,
it offense. They looked off from the get-go, I thought. I mean, just right off the bat, it looked like it was just going to go south. And
well, but, and in a true home environment for Georgia, which Tennessee hasn't experienced much of that this year, right? They're used to their home stadium, which, listen, if you're an outsider coming in there, Neyland Stadium, that is a huge home field advantage. But, you know, when they went to LSU, yes, they were playing in Tiger Stadium, but they actually lucked out a little bit because it was that noon game. But that Georgia Stadium, I mean, that was a huge home field environment. And really quick, I just need to eat my words, because I really thought that this Georgia team didn't look like a national championship team from what we have seen so far from them this year. You know, having a close game against Missouri, not having, you know, the toughest SEC schedule. And I need to eat my words right now, because Stetson Bennett played phenomenal.
He looked
out
really
there.
Good.
And I think there was a texter on the text line. Like, he has very much, I think that he should be back in the conversation for Heisman. I don't know why people are not talking more about him in that conversation since that game. I mean, their defense looked lethal, and this Georgia team does not only look like they could win the national championship again, they look like they have been recruiting and they could be like Bama from a couple years ago and just keep the momentum and not even take a step back year to year.
And I tweeted this out. I really think the College Football Playoff Committee did Tennessee a service. I think them putting them at number one, knowing they were going into Georgia, knowing that they were heavy underdogs in this game, but that tells me that the committee still believes that Tennessee is a top four team, because they're sitting at number five and Michigan and Ohio State still have to play each other without the merit that Tennessee still has. So Tennessee fans, I get it. It was a tough loss for you guys against Georgia, but the way that things played out with Alabama and LSU in that game, that stuff is really, really going to help going forward. So still something to look forward to the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Go, Jared.
I was just going to say, I mean, yeah, just like what you said earlier, going back to the first of the season, you kind of already accumulated for two losses, there, you know, to be said, but it's still a great season, and there's the job's still not done. Like you said, you got two people in front of you that can both get out of the top four. You can catapult into the top four. The only way that you can get out of it at this point is if you lose a game these next three games.
So let's talk about that a little bit more on the other side of the break and what it would look like this year if the 12-team playoff was implemented. And what is Tennessee's path to the college football playoff this year? You are listening to the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5 The Game, 106.3, and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. I'm Michelle Knezovic with Junie Riddle. We got Jared Cassidy. We're all live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios this morning on this beautiful Saturday morning. And the Michelle and Junie Show is presented by the Nashville Jam Company, the best breakfast and brunch spot in town. Also, Superbook Sportsbook. You should go download it, superbooksportsbook.com. We are going to be making our picks, taking a look at all of those lines later in the show at 9:45. Junie, we just do not have enough time today because we want to talk about college football. We want to talk about the 12-team playoff, but there is just so many storylines going on with the Tennessee Titans. So before, I teased before the break, I know I did, Vols fans, don't you worry, we are getting to it. But something quick we need to mention before we head into the Tennessee Vols and what the 12-team playoff could look like, also what Tennessee's path and what you should be rooting for other teams so Tennessee has the best shot into getting into that playoff. But Treylon Burks is going to be back for the Tennessee Titans. He came off IR. He had, you know, that turf toe injury. And Todd Downing spoke, Mike Vrabel spoke, and they really highlighted that they were very, very proud of him while he was on IR because they said, you know, he was running, he was conditioning, and he was being very engaged in meeting rooms and different things like that and doing as much as he could while not being able to actually practice. So, you know, we saw how terrible the wide receiver play was in the Kansas City game and how, listen, when you got Malik Willis out there and your wide receiver core already looks like this, whereas Ryan Tannehill doesn't have much action from out there, you know, having Treylon Burks, a guy who, yes, is a rookie, but still was a first-round pick and, you know, hopefully, well, not hopefully, has a higher ceiling than some of these other guys on the field right now.
For sure, for sure.
This will be a good addition, but there's still just a question mark. We do not know who is going to play under center on Sunday.
No, yeah, but I mean, either way, having Treylon Burks back is huge. I personally think Kyle Phillips at this moment in time is a little bit more valuable to this offense because of his route running ability, being able to catch balls over the middle. So, you know, obviously they're wanting him back, but I mean, this guy is a big body. He's 6'2". Mm-hmm. He's good in the open field. He's hard to bring down. And just flat out, he is more talented than the receivers that we have for the Titans right now. I mean, listen, Robert Woods is a veteran, but he's coming off an ACL. He hasn't been the same guy that Titans fans expected him to be. Austin Hooper, he's slowly starting to get into the mix, but yet he's still not been the difference maker tight end that this team expected to have. So
I will say, though, a couple game-changing catches for Austin Hooper. I think of the hand one against the Colts a couple weeks ago, and then two huge catches.
I'm talking about you know, getting a lot of yards and a lot of touchdowns and a lot of catches on third down. It wasn't what we thought, but, you know, we started to see Treylon Burks in the beginning of the season get some high-volume catches. Some, you know, he was looking like he was going to be the number one receiver early on in the year, but listen, turf toe's no joke. Mm-hmm. I've dealt with turf toe. I got it in high school. It is a pain in the neck. It makes it really hard on your foot and the ligaments that are kind of connecting your big toe to the rest of the foot. It's painful. So the fact that he really did stay conditioned and you know, getting ready for that moment to come back in here, it seems like he's starting to get it a little more rather than when he came in to camp, you know, out of shape. So good for Treylon Burks. It's good to have him back. So hopefully we can see an impact with him, especially if Ryan Tannehill is back in the fold.
Yes, that is definitely something we'll get more into with Anilo Pirro, who is going to be joining us at 9:30 from Mile High Sports in Denver. We're going to get more into into the specifics of the matchup. And what is Denver's feel right now surrounding the Broncos after so much hype in the offseason once they acquired Russell Wilson? But right now I want to get into a little college football, college playoff talk right now, because we talked a bit on Tennessee and how they were ranked number one before they headed in to Athens to play Georgia. Georgia is now first. Second is Ohio State. Third is Michigan, and fourth is TCU. Tennessee is fifth, and then sixth is Oregon. I mentioned the top six because I think that a bunch of those teams are going to – we're going to learn a lot about where Tennessee fits heading into this weekend, this slate of games today, and then obviously next week as well. First on the list, TCU versus Texas. This is a huge game. If TCU stays undefeated, they will be in the college football playoff. They have to be. They're undefeated. Listen, they will put them in the college football playoff.
Yeah. As of right now with the ranking, I mean, if they went out and they win their conference, yeah, they're going to be in.
And you can argue strength of schedule. It doesn't matter. If they're undefeated, they will be in. No questions asked. Okay, so that's TCU, right? They play Texas today. I think that this could be a potential upset alert, but.
For who? Because Texas is favored.
Oh, well, I mean, upset alert just in the sense of TCU's undefeated and they're ranked fourth right now in the college football playoff.
Yeah,
even though Texas is favored because it is in.
I think they're favored by about seven. I saw 7.5 yesterday. I've not checked that line since yesterday. Yesterday was a crazy day going out covering high school football playoffs. But listen, Texas is, I believe, a touchdown favorite in this game, and that kind of shows you what Vegas thinks about TCU, which, I mean, if they really think that TCU's that bad, I don't know why the committee's putting them in the top four. Maybe because there was so much outrage, and they're like, okay, well, we'll put you at four, and we'll let you prove it the rest of the way. But, I mean, still, I'm not a believer in TCU. I think Texas is going
to
beat them.
Well, listen, I mean, if you look at Vegas, I mean, they've ranked TCU to be like the 15th ranked team in the country. But the reason they're at four is because what is the college football playoff all about? It is all about, you know, having the least amount of losses. The reason they are at four, it is not because they are the fourth best team in the country. It is because they are undefeated. And you can view that however you want to view that. Okay, so that is one big game that people need to be watching out for.
Just real quick, the current line is 7 in Texas's favor right now.
Okay, so yeah, so Texas is a touchdown favorite. Okay, so you got TCU. Or Michigan and Ohio State, that'll be an interesting one because obviously one of them will not be undefeated because they play each other. This is the way I look at it. If Ohio State wins that game, Michigan is out. Michigan does not have any strength of schedule, any argument with the one loss.
Schedule is horrible.
They didn't play anybody in like the preseason, any non-conference games. Listen,
Colorado State, Hawaii.
Come on.
Garbage.
But if they beat Ohio State, I think they're both in. Michigan beats Ohio State, I think Ohio State and Michigan both find their way into the college football playoff.
Because then
Ohio State will only have one loss to Michigan, but then you look at that Notre Dame win, that's going to mean more.
My only thing is that this game is too late in the season. It's, you know what I'm
saying? Michigan, Ohio State?
Yes, it's too late. If it was early, you could probably get away with that, and you might be able to get two of those in, but I think that it being so late and the determining winner winning the Big Ten, then I don't see there's any way that they're going to let two Big Ten teams in.
Ohio State hasn't really looked that good this year. They haven't had like a key impressive win on their schedule. I mean, they struggled against Northwestern last week, and I get it, the conditions weren't always the best. But listen, C.J. Stroud is the Heisman favorite right now. He's considered to be a top 10 lock pick in the NFL draft. You cannot barely beat Northwestern this season. Listen, Northwestern's had some good teams in the past, but this year's not good. And then Ohio State having to come back and beat Penn State. Like, Penn State is not on Ohio State's level of talent, and Ohio State just hasn't been impressive. And again, we're talking about them beating Notre Dame the first game of the year with a brand new head
coach. Yeah, but the college football playoff doesn't really look at that. First off, we all know that the college football playoff, each week they tell us, or Bo, whenever he speaks to everybody, they say the different things that they're looking at, and I feel like they contradict themselves every single week. Because one week it's about wins, one week it's about strength of schedule,
one week it's
about conference championships. But I don't think you can say, first off, I don't think Michigan is going to beat Ohio State. First off,
I don't either.
But if they do, I don't think you can't. You can't not put Ohio State in with one loss, their only loss being to Michigan, who's in the top four. I mean, that would be like putting Tennessee in with their only loss against, or not putting Tennessee in with their only loss against Georgia. And Georgia, yeah, they had a close win against Missouri, but you can fight the argument both ways. What I think is, I don't think Michigan is going to beat Ohio State. I can say that till I'm blue in the face. But if they do, I mean, I think you have to put them both in.
Or you put Ohio State in and you leave Michigan out. The better argument for me is if Oregon wins out and wins their conference championship. Now, is a Pac-12 championship more impressive than Tennessee's strength of schedule?
That's the one thing for me.
I would say the committee is more likely to put in a conference championship Oregon if they were to win out than to put the loser of Michigan and Ohio State. I think that's something that Tennessee fans would have to worry about.
Okay,
more.
But you also have to worry about, too, because USC and UCLA also both have one loss. So technically,
yeah,
but they still have to play, though.
Yes, one of them is gonna have to win out and then beat Oregon.
But what I'm saying is, you have a couple teams to look out for in the Pac-12, because I agree with you, Junie. If you have a Pac-12 winner, say it's Oregon. If you have a winner, they have one loss. The loss is to Georgia, the first game of the season, but they also have one loss and they have a Pac-12 championship. They will make it in over Tennessee because they have that championship. I personally think that Tennessee is a better team, but I'm trying to play, you know, devil's advocate that I think the college football playoff would put Oregon in.
So here's my prediction, because and we talked about this when we did our show at Barrel House before the Preds game a few weeks ago. I told you I think Texas is going to beat TCU. I think that is what's going to put
Tennessee
in, because then that leaves room for Tennessee to still get in, and then the winner of the Pac-12, whoever's going to get out of that with one loss and be the champion, will go ahead and get it. Because listen, I think the Pac-12 is personally better than the Big 12. I think the Big 12 has had one of its worst years. Texas, you know, Ewers being out, you know, the first half of the season kind of really took them out of contention. Oklahoma's been a huge disappointment. Oklahoma State has been a huge disappointment the second half of the year. So I think that they're going to be completely out once TCU gets that one loss, which I think will happen today. And then once that happens, I think Tennessee, as long as they went out, and they went out impressively the way they should with their remaining schedule, I just don't think Vols fans have a lot to worry about.
Oh, I wish that we had a 12-team playoff this year, because there are so many teams that are on the cusp this year, or there's so many different situations where we could see different teams get into the four-team college football playoff right now. Listen, as much as we want to continue our college football talk, we will revisit this talk at 9:45, and we also will put in our picks and our locks of the day. But coming up next, we have got Anilo Pirro from Mile High Sports in Denver. We are going to preview the Titans Broncos game coming up tomorrow in Nissan Stadium. You're listening to Michelle Knezovic, the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
How much do you think it has bothered Ryan not to be able to play, and just knowing his personality, how much do you think he's itching to get back out there?
Yeah, you guys have been around him long enough to know it's killing him. You know, he's a fierce competitor. We all know how tough he is. You know, he is doing everything possible to get back out there, and, you know, we're really appreciative to have a guy like that that's putting so much into it, and it means so much to him.
That was Todd Downing earlier this week speaking on Ryan Tannehill and his ability to practice with the team. And will we see him on Sunday in Nissan Stadium against the Denver Broncos? Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. We are live from the Hillside Medical Games Studio on this Saturday morning. I'm Michelle Knezovic, joined with Junie Riddle and Jared Cassidy. And right now, we go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and we welcome in Anilo Pirro from Mile High Sports in Denver. AP, how we doing this Saturday morning? Thanks for taking time to hop on with us this morning.
I am great. Hope you guys are doing well out there in Tennessee. It's a sunny day here in the Mile High City, getting ready for some Denver Bronco football. It feels like it's been about a month and a half since they last played, coming off the bye, so I'm excited to get back into the orange and blue and chat things all Tennessee Titans as well. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah, no, of course. We'd love to have you on. So first off, let's just talk a little bit about Denver and in the offseason. Obviously, you guys acquire Russell Wilson, and there was a lot of hype surrounding this team, especially on the offensive offensive side of things. I mean, I think when we talked earlier this week on the Mile High Sports, I said, you know, I thought that the Chiefs could be last in this division and Denver could be the runaway winner with it. But what has been, you know, the vibe from the fan base surrounding Russell Wilson and just, you know, the kind of flop from this offense so far this season?
Yeah, you know, the fan base is not satisfied. And I'm not sure how familiar you guys are with Broncos country, but they are – I'm not going to put them on the level of the Philadelphia sports fan. But, yeah, you know, they're very – like, the Broncos are top dog out here. People love their Avalanche. People love the Nuggets. The Rockies are kind of in a state of oblivion. But, like, the Broncos are the one true team that people rally around and care about, like, in a life-or-death situation. So, you know, I use this – I've talked about it out here. Like, everybody feels like they got bamboozled, quite literally. I mean, you bring in Russell Wilson. You bring in a new head coach, you have a new ownership group, and George Payton's in his second year running the office, running the front office, and you have completely fallen flat on your face. So it has been a bumpy ride, for lack of a better phrase, here in Broncos country, but, you know, I think there's still some optimism. Look at how they played against Jacksonville, and I think more so, Michelle, it was a matter of tempering expectations. I think the Bronco fan was so deprived after losing Peyton Manning. You think about Trevor Siemian, Case Keenum, Paxton Lynch, right? You know, they went through these cycles of mediocre quarterbacks. The second you get a household name in Russell Wilson in here, you think, you know, you're going to be able to slap a Band-Aid on the open wound, and away you go. That has not been the case. So I think the Broncos will have an opportunity to have a strong second half of the season. We'll definitely have to see here. But, yeah, it has been a not necessarily ideal start to the Russell Wilson era. They paid him, what, $245 million? And he's looked, you know, as good, if not worse, than some of the guys they've had in the last 2 or 3 years. So curious to see how they come out of the bye against these Titans, but it has not been good to start that era.
And the Broncos have been, you know, top on the defensive side of things in the entire NFL right now. But something closely to look at, and what we talked about earlier this week, is, you know, their rushing defense. I mean, Josh Jacobs of the Raiders rushed for 144 yards on the Broncos, and they've been known for having such a solid defense. Do you think that they will be able to stop Derrick Henry on Sunday?
You know, that's a $1 million question. And, you know, something I'm not sure if you guys have picked up on, there's a little bit of a sickness bug going around the locker room here in Colorado. I haven't checked this morning to see what the latest updates were, but I did see, you know, on my show yesterday, there was a handful of players that were not practicing and were practicing separate from some of the other players. So there's a little bit of a sickness that you're going to have to keep an eye on here, which can throw a wrench into the Broncos game plan. Not exactly sure, you know, what the dynamics are there, but, you know, they traded away Bradley Chubb, who was one of their big defensive players. So this will be their first game without him, but they are deep on the defensive line, the linebacker position, guys like Baron Browning, Nick Benito. You know, they've got some talent up there as well. Jonathan Cooper, guys they like a lot. You know, maybe some lesser name guys that maybe people don't know around the league, but there's certainly a lot of confidence out here, you know, in some of these younger guys to step up and kind of fill the void of what Bradley Chubb left. But, you know, as we know, whether it's Ryan Tannehill or Malik Willis, you know, you're probably going to run the ball a million times to Derrick Henry. So, you know, you'd hope coming out of the bye that with the players that they have, you know, you put a pretty good game plan together. And I'll say this, look, you can never game plan to stop King Henry, like, through and through. But you want to see an effort, and I think that's what Broncos country is, just try to limit him in some way. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to do it, just because over the last 4 or 5 weeks, it looks like he's really taking things up a notch.
We're speaking to Anilo Pirro, Mile High Sports in Denver. Anilo, talk to me about Nathaniel Hackett. I mean, this guy was really successful as a coordinator in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, and like Michelle had said, there was a lot of expectations offensively going out and getting Russell Wilson. Talk to me about him struggling as a head coach this first half of the season, and some of his like game management decisions that has been brought up in the national media.
Yeah, you know, it's been head-scratching. And, you know, Nathaniel Hackett was considered to be, you know, the cream of the crop of some of these head coaching candidates alongside Brian Daboll and some of the other guys that got hired this offseason. And in a nutshell, guys, it looks like he is calling plays for Aaron Rodgers still. Like, that's, in a simple sense, that's what it looks like. And I think there's – you can't put all the blame of their struggles on Nathaniel Hackett. I think you split it between Hackett and Russell Wilson, because there's clearly been some sort of a disconnect. But, you know, on top of that, you know, one thing that's been coming out of Broncos country here is how much influence did Nathaniel Hackett have in Green Bay? Because when you have an otherworldly quarterback in Aaron Rodgers, you know, I'm sure he makes up for some, you know, shortcomings or whatever it might be. Not that I'm saying that Nathaniel Hackett's a bad play caller or anything along those lines, but, you know, you throw him into the fire here in Denver. You essentially give him, you know, it's not like the Broncos are, you know, depleted with skilled players at the wide receiver position or at running back or tight end. They finally got Dulcich back. And they have just not been able to look consistent whatsoever. So, you know, I think Nathaniel Hackett, he, you know, lack of a better phrase, he's looked like a deer in the headlights to a degree. You know, there's been some very awful moments. It looks like he's corrected some of the time management as the season has progressed here a little bit. But, you know, like I said, relative to expectations, bringing in a new coach, bringing in a new quarterback with that new ownership group, I mean, it's hard to do much worse than Nathaniel Hackett has. And I'm not trying to be harsh, but, you know, that's the perspective of the fan out here. You know, people are fed up with this. They're not really sure how this even happened. So, you know, at this point, though, you know, the Walter Penner ownership group said they're expecting a strong second half to the season. So, you know, I guess you have to give them the benefit of the doubt on that sense. And, you know, you have the bye week. Let's see how they come out of that. But, like I said, it just looks like he's still trying to call plays for Aaron Rodgers. I mean, not a lot of play action, you know, and we know Russell Wilson in his career has never really liked to work the middle of the field. He's been more of a sideline passer, but the mobility hasn't been there for Russell Wilson either. So the biggest question mark from you guys has been the lack of adjustment with the play calling. Like, sometimes you'll see them come out decent to start a game, mm-hmm. but that's probably because the first 10 to 15 plays are scripted, right? There's not a lot of adjustment. The third down play calling has been awful, and I think that's in tandem on part of Hackett and Wilson, but you know, it's going to fall on the head coach, especially after you paid Wilson $245 million.
Well, speaking about Russell Wilson and, you know, giving him such a big contract, do you think that watching him, you've seen him take a step back? And do we think that Pete Carroll in Seattle might have known something about it and, you know, making the move with Russell Wilson? I mean, what is the vibe specifically surrounding him? And do you think that he hasn't played to expectations so far?
A lot. I mean, he definitely hasn't played up to expectations, and just a lot of people scratching their head out here in Colorado, right? Because, you know, like I said, you've been starved at the quarterback position for so long, and you bring in a guy like Russell Wilson who's won a Super Bowl and been to two, and I think, you know, you expect to at least have a winning record, you know, and look at some of the teams that they've lost to. I know the Jets are playing pretty good, but that was an awful loss. Losing to Seattle, who's better than we think, but they've just looked miserable in some of these losses. You know, the dreaded number 16, it feels like they can barely get over 16 points scored. I believe there was three games in a row this season where they scored 16 points. So, you know, at the end of the day here, I think you still have to wait and see a little bit with Russell Wilson. And I don't know, you guys are probably familiar with the whole Broncos country, let's ride and whatnot, but that's kind of rubbing people the wrong way out here. It's not the let's ride specifically, but he's had a number of just like quirky things. Like when he was hurt, he came out to the podium and he said he's got Wolverine's blood. And then obviously, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he was doing high knees on the plane on the way to London. He's just doing these things that like cast this interesting vibe about like, it's like in his mind, it looks like things are sunshine and rainbows. Meanwhile, Broncos country is like, what the heck is going on? We're not playing mm-hmm. winning football. So, you know, I like to say winning cures all. If the Broncos start winning football games, he can do whatever he wants, and the fan base isn't going to really care. So in regards to his performance, though, it does look like he's gotten a little bit older. You know, he's mm-hmm. not as mobile as he once was in Seattle. At least we haven't seen the mobility like we once did. And the thing that's concerning to me, you know, I mentioned how he likes to use the sidelines as opposed to the middle of the field, but there's been a number of times, guys, where he's just, like, not going through progressions. You know, mm-hmm. he'll have an open receiver on his left side, but he's only looking right, and doesn't end up looking to the other side. I don't know if you remember at the end of that Thursday night football game against the Colts. He had K.G. Hamler wide open in the end zone.
How could we forget that one?
Yeah, and then Hamler, you know, throws the helmet off in frustration. So, you know, big question mark with Mr. Russell Wilson. But again, you know, we've seen him do it at a high level before. We're just waiting to see him do it again here with the Broncos.
Okay, and lastly, you know I can't let you go without asking some of the bets you've got on for Sunday's game. You know we love Superbook. Are you hammering the under for this game coming up on Sunday?
Yes, definitely going with the under last night. It's actually moved up since you and I last spoke, Michelle. I believe we were talking about it on my show. 37.5 was the number. I'm seeing 30.5 last I checked. So love the under in this game. I just think there's question marks on both sides. Definitely keep an eye on the illness bug here with the Broncos, too. Not sure how that's going to shake out and result with this team, but love the under, and I think the spread is right around 2.5 still. Love that as a tease spot for the Broncos because I like the under in this game. I think you can tease the Broncos up, and, you know, a six-point teaser gets them up through the key number of 7. You could look to pair them with a team like Pittsburgh, who I believe is plus 1.5 at home right now against the New Orleans Saints team that I'm not super high on. I think the under, if I have to go with a straight bet, that's definitely where I lean. I would also look to tease the Broncos up and put them with another team.
Okay, we love it, AP. Thank you so much for hopping on with us today. Like I said, Mile High Sports in Denver. You can follow him. Give us your Twitter handle really quick, AP.
I am at Media by AP. Thank you guys so much for the opportunity. Hopefully we could do it again soon.
Yes, sounds good. That was Anilo Pirro from Mile High Sports in Denver. Also works a lot with Superbook Sports, which we love so much. And speaking of that, we're going to take a look at the lines on Superbook Sports coming up next. Text us in 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Any of your locks for the weekends, what props you've got on any of these games coming up, the NFL slate, the college slate. And we will give you ours coming up next on the Michelle and Juni Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the Michelle and Juni Show. We are live on 102.5, 106.3 The Game from the Hillside Medical Game Studio this morning. Michelle Knezvik, Juni Riddle, Jared Cassidy. Listen, Juni just reminded me. I forgot we have a pair of tickets to give away today. Listen, this Sunday in Bridgestone Arena, it's finally basketball season, guys. We got the Tennessee Volunteers facing the Colorado Buffalo. So listen, we got two Colorado teams coming to Tennessee this weekend. We got the Vols versus the Colorado Buffaloes in Bridgestone on Sunday. If you want those pair of tickets, call right now at 615-737-1025. That's 615-737-1025. We're going to give you some tickets to go see that basketball game this Sunday in Bridgestone Arena. And guys, why don't we start with the Titans Broncos game? The line is at 2.5 in favor of the Tennessee Titans. With all of these injuries on Tennessee's side, you know, the Broncos kind of figuring out things offensively. Juni, who do you think will cover that spread this Sunday?
I think Ryan Tannehill plays.
Okay, yeah.
And I'm going with the Titans. I like the Titans because I trust Mike Vrabel in these situations, mm-hmm. and it always seems like when I pick against the Titans in a game that seems like everything's stacked up against them, that Vrabel rallies the troops and get it done. I think that they do enough, especially with Treylon Burks coming back, and I think Tannehill, the way he looked, I think he will play, and I think they win, and they win exactly by three, covering by only half a point.
Ooh, I like that. I think it's going to be a very, very close game. Listen, I'm going to give a little score prediction. I think it's Tennessee Titans 19, Broncos 17. So I'm very much on the same page as you. I think Tennessee will win outright, but I do think that they are going to just barely cover this spread. And also definitely taking the under. Right now it's 39 on the Superbook app. I think that it's going to be a very low-scoring game.
I can see that, but I also my score prediction. I'm going to take the surprising over.
Okay.
I think Denver gets a little bit more offense than what they think without Jeffrey Simmons and Bud Dupree being back there to disrupt Russell Wilson. I'm going 23-20 Titans. I think Derrick Henry has a pretty good game, and I think you're going to see a little bit more offensive production from both teams than what most people expect.
Heading to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Mike. Tennessee Titans. Listen, everyone, I'm trying. It's that northernness in me. The Tennessee Titans. See, that's not how you say it. You don't
there
pronounce?
You go.
Kind of, I guess. Okay, we're on to the next, Juni. Okay, so we've got the Vols and Missouri today in Neyland Stadium. It's senior day for them. And the line is 19 points on Tennessee's front. I think that Tennessee ends up beating Missouri by about three touchdowns. I know that they have a pretty good defense, Missouri does. I mean, we saw how close that game was against Georgia, but I think that Tennessee needs some style points today, especially with their second half schedule, you know, heading into the college football playoffs. They need to get some style points today and win big.
I'm taking the Vols as well. I truly believe the best betting advice I've ever gotten was when a really good team takes a bad loss the week before, look for them to bounce back. I wouldn't have taken this line if it was in Missouri, but the fact that it's in Neyland after mm-hmm. a tough loss, I think they're going to flex their muscle a little bit. Give me the Vols on the points.
Okay, and then lastly, we've got Vanderbilt heading up to my alma mater. Kentucky is an 18-point favorite. I'm actually going to take Vanderbilt plus the 18. It's supposed to not be very good weather up in Lexington today. It's going to be cold, rainy. I think it's going to be a slugfest. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game, but I honestly just don't think Kentucky can score enough points to beat Vanderbilt by 18.
It's Vanderbilt. and I'm taking the Cats. Listen, I'm just not gonna get screwed by Vandy again. That when they didn't cover the 40.5 against Bama, especially this Bama team. Now that we've kind of seen what they are, give me the Wildcats. The Wildcats are gonna dominate them. Will Levis and company. Like I said, we talked about this. Stoops likes to run the ball and play defense. What wins in the rain? Running the ball and playing defense. So give me the Cats.
Okay, and lastly, listen, we're done with our picks today. We'll post some more on Twitter following the show, but we have to get into this argument quick, and I know we need more time to talk about this, and this will be a topic of discussion pretty much for the entire rest of the season since we have seen him take the field this NFL season, which we didn't think he would. Whose fault was it on Sunday? Was it the wide receiver's fault, or was it Malik Willis's fault? I am very confident that Nick Westbrook-Ikhina and Chris Conley should have caught in those two passes. Yes, Malik Willis could have thrown a better pass, but he is in a red shirt year and nobody expected him to do that. So when you have a rookie quarterback out there, other people have to step up who have actually played in NFL games before, whereas this is only his second game. So I put it more on the wide receivers than I put it on Malik Willis, which also kind of is John Robinson, considering he won't pay wide receivers like AJ Brown or get anybody by the trade deadline. Junior, thoughts?
I'm going towards more Malik Willis. Listen, the guy had 80 yards on 5 completions, and listen, a chunk of those 48 yards of those 80 yards came on his first play on a tight end screen. After that, he was 4 of 15 for 38 yards. I don't care what kind of quarterback you are. I don't care if you're a backup. I don't care if you're a rookie. If you have that kind of performance, you cannot tell me that it's not on the quarterback. Listen, there were open receivers in this game that he missed, and he also missed guys on like that he actually threw to that he just did not connect with. I think Malik Willis has a lot of growing to do, and I think it's on the Titans of not doing their due diligence of getting a backup quarterback. They've relied on Ryan Tannehill too much, and now that he's starting to get the injury bug this year, it's starting to bite him in the rear end. So, listen, Malik Willis has to play better. Yes, he's a rookie, but listen, when you're being put in the limelight, I expect more from you as a quarterback in this league. You cannot sit there and throw for only 80 yards and 48 of them coming on a tight end screen and expecting to win in a game like this against Kansas City.
Okay, but I also put it on, offensive play calling too,
I'll agree with you on that. Listen, they didn't put a lot of under routes. There weren't a lot of check down options for him, but the fact of the matter is there were still open receivers, and when you only throw for 5 completions out of 16 attempts, that's not good no matter who is playing wide receiver whatsoever. Quarterbacks in this league have to be able to throw receivers open. Malik Willis is so limited on where he can throw the ball. He is just flat out not ready. He shouldn't be the backup quarterback. He shouldn't be playing at all because there should be a better option on this team to be able to play. I like Malik Willis. I think he's a good kid. I think he could grow. I think he could develop. But right now, it's not his time and it's not his moment to be in there and to be actually playing. They need somebody else.
I completely agree. I don't think Malik Willis is ready. I think that this should have been a redshirt year for him. But listen, injuries happen. Will Ryan Tannehill play for Tennessee this Sunday? That is the biggest question heading into this matchup against Denver. Coming up next, we've got Southeastern Carolines with Caroline Fenton. She's going to dive deeper into all of the lines for this SEC slate today. You are listening to the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game and the Game Nashville app.